Welcome to Design Biz Survival Guide, a podcast about life and business for interior design professionals. My name is Rick Campos, and this podcast is my response to a design community eager to support, share, and inspire one another. We all know that some things simply cannot be taught in a classroom. I believe that our number one resource for information and inspiration is our peers. Join me as I sit down with industry professionals from across the country to discuss their secret to survival in the business of design. Today, we welcome Katie Bouchard, founder of Pen & Napkin, a 501c3 nonprofit design community that furnishes and decorates homes for families and individuals transitioning out of homelessness. In this episode, Katie shares how a budding career in industrial design was sidelined by an aha moment that redefined her life passion. We also discuss the impact that design has on the people and families whose lives have been compromised, and how our design community can unite to solve the needs of our greater community. This episode is not only informational and inspirational, it is also a call to action. If you're looking for an opportunity to leverage your skills and resources to benefit others, this episode is for you. Before we get started, we'd like to acknowledge our sponsors who help keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is sponsored by Perch, the design community's premier resource for appliances, decorative plumbing, and outdoor brands. Perch is dedicated to quality, service, and a heightened showroom experience, making them the preferred choice among architects, builders, and designers just like you. With locations in Los Angeles, Orange County, Palm Springs, and San Diego, and more locations coming soon, their interactive showroom experience must be seen to believe. Fully functional displays and a demo kitchen featuring the industry's top brands provides the ultimate test drive for design enthusiasts. As a trade professional, you're eligible for their exclusive rewards program, Perch Premier, where you'll earn credits for every purchase of appliances, plumbing, hardware, and outdoor kitchens. This program is loaded with perks and benefits, so sign up today and tell them that you heard about Perch Premier on Design Biz Survival Guide. And now, our conversation with Katie Bouchard of Pen & Napkin. So Katie, welcome to the podcast. It is so great to have you.
Thank you for having me.
I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Me too.
So I know we've got lots to cover. I'm very excited about what you're doing, but before we dig into that, let's start by talking about you personally for a second, just so our listeners can kind of understand a little bit about you. Tell us about yourself, where are you from, all that good stuff.
Okay, cool. I am from California, specifically Glendale, California. I grew up here. Happen to be in town right now visiting family. My husband and I, we met in Glendale. We actually met in high school. We are not high school sweethearts. I had a huge crush on him, but he didn't really notice me. I mean, he says he notices me, but I don't know. It's like one of those things, like he would give me like a side hug here and there in high school. But 9 years later, he messaged me and I lost my mind. And then we were engaged within 3 months and married in 6. And now we have 3 kids and all 3 of them are super beautiful. I love them to death. Audrey is 5, Aria is 3, and Armor Rose is turning 2 in a few months.
Cool.
So I'm a busy mom. I just started homeschooling, which is crazy, but learning how to do that and teaching my 5-year-old how to read has been the most rewarding thing I've ever done. I started my design career kind of in college, I guess. I got an internship my sophomore year, which is completely unheard of. I went to school at Cal State Long Beach, Go Beach. And I loved the design program there, but I really wanted to explore different design worlds. So I got an internship at a steel case dealership called Tangram Interiors. Mm-hmm. And I worked there for years. And then I kind of moved within the company into their custom furniture department. And when I graduated from Cal State Long Beach, I started working as an industrial designer, designing custom furniture for office spaces, like really cool entertainment companies. Like we did DreamWorks Office and Hulu when they first started. Got to be a part of that growth. We did like Urban Decay and like all these really fun, exciting companies like blowing up, and we got to be a part of that. I loved doing that work. I loved my team. I loved my boss. We're a really close knit group of just creatives who like love to create really cool stuff.
That has to be exciting. That's so cool.
Oh gosh. Yeah. I mean, it's a designer's dream to draw something and have it come to life, or mass manufactured. Right. Super cool job. But when we reached our first showroom in downtown LA, and I was going into LA every day working in downtown, I started to really, open my eyes to the homeless experiences that people were having. So like individuals living on the street or living in tents and things like that. And I started to ask myself the question, like, what could I do to help? You know, I think we've all faced that. Like we have to either decide to do something or ignore it. And some of us can, you know, hand out money or hand out goodie bags. And that's not always safe for a young woman to do. I don't recommend that. But being a part of like a soup kitchen or something like that, where you're surrounded by people to give back, is great. I was doing all those things, but I still wasn't seeing the change I wanted to see. And I didn't feel like I was using my skills as a designer to make that change happen, right? I wanted the two passions in my life, which is helping people and doing design, to kind of collide. So I don't know. And at that point, we were killing it in downtown LA. We had a very successful showroom. We were growing. My team was growing. And I just had this really heartbreaking moment where I was sitting and, or actually standing in my office, or like my little station up at the showroom, and looking out the window from like the 12th story down to the street, watching a woman pull her lunch out of the trash can and begin to eat it. And I just felt like, for me at that moment, I felt like God was just like, what if your client was this woman? Would you treat her any differently? And I was kind of thinking like, no, I would treat her just as well as I treat, you know, my $1 million clients. And he's like, will you do that for me? And I was like, okay, like, what does that look like? Like, how can I do that? And so then, then the journey of Pen and Napkin and pursuing Pen and Napkin begins.
That is so incredible. Okay, so this is a part I almost fell apart, but I kept it together because it's just, there's something about your story. And as it progresses, I'm sure everyone will understand why it's so important, and it's so incredible. It's interesting to hear that you were in a place in your design career where you were just killing it and things were going so incredible, and it was like that gig that every designer would kill to have, and things were so going so incredibly well, yet those moments made you think that maybe wasn't it. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah, I think my boss kind of said it the best. She said, Katie, when I hired you, you always had wings on your back. Almost like I knew you were going to take off at some point. Like I knew you weren't going to be able to stay in this team or stay in this company, because there was always going to be a ceiling, you know? Mm-hmm. And I used to ask myself, do I want her job one day? Because like, right, that would be like the top, right? Like being a director of a design department, like that would be the best. And I used to ask myself, do I want that job? And she's so good at it, and she's still killing it. I just had dinner with her the other night, and I'm so proud of her and the team that she's built. And I would never want to take that from her or anybody. And I just had to find my own thing that I wanted to build. And when Pen and Napkin, kind of the name just fell into my head one day. I have no other way of explaining it. I wasn't trying to come up with a name at all. I was on the 405 freeway in traffic, and it just hit me like a ton of bricks. And I just thought it was a really cool name. I was like, this could be anything. This could be a design house. This could be a furniture line. This could be really anything. But what it is the name comes from my design process of like being inspired randomly. And the only thing that's nearby is like a napkin, and then just jotting down the solution, or being at a meal with friends and trying to come up with how we're going to fix that end panel so it doesn't expose the hardware, and like how we're going to streamline that, and how are we going to make the architect happy? Like, oh, you know what? I just got an idea. And I'm like, wiping my face from my sandwich, but I'm like drawing this in panel or whatever solution. So it just happened to be a part of me. Like even, you know, with song lyrics or poems growing up, they were always jotted on the corner of pieces of paper or napkins, because that's in essence when inspiration strikes, like you're not always prepared, right? That's kind of the idea. But what it also is just, this is a solution. Like, what is the solution? So Pen and Napkin exists to solve needs in the community. But how do we do that? Well, we are a community of designers willing to solve needs in the community. So I had to be the first example of that. So when Pen and Napkin finally became a nonprofit, I had to write down that mission statement, which I did: creative professionals solving needs in the community. And then I was like, okay, well, what does that look like? What needs are we going to solve? So it's very, you know, quick that I had to find a need for me to solve. And it doesn't, and that's like in a broad sense, like I'm not trying to end homelessness. That's not possible. But what need, what immediate need could I solve for one individual person, right? Yeah. Like breaking it down so that it's manageable, right? So I ended up quitting my job in the design world, which was the scariest move ever, being that we were doing really well. We were just breaking into like making $10 million a year, and we were a small team. And it was so, I wanted to grow with them, and I knew they were going to take off, but I also wanted to create Pen and Napkin. So I left, I worked remotely temporarily because I was too afraid to let go entirely. and so I finally like let go. But while I was pursuing Pen and Napkin, I decided to go back to school. That was like the only logical thing I could do for like my family and friends to understand this career change, was like, go back to school, like go get your master's. That seems like you're making a wise decision, but like quitting your job and starting a nonprofit on a whim was like crazy. Not something, yeah, like not something that people would recommend doing or I even recommend doing, but it's what needed to happen. And I never finished my master's. I think I have like 6 more classes to take. I never finished it, but one of my classes was community development, and we had to like analyze a very successful program in our community that helped people in transition. And so I found a transitional living center. I had to learn the difference between a transitional center and a shelter. A lot of people don't know that when you're in transition, all these different resources exist. Some people think that they're just shelters, they're temporary housing, temporary solutions, just to get you off the street. But there's other programs that exist that are kind of similar to like a rehab program, where it's like 6 months, 2 years, you have to commit to a long-term program to kind of start over. And for women who have experienced domestic violence, people who are transitioning out of prison, refugees, survivors of human trafficking, this is crucial. You can't just get handed keys and be given an apartment and be successful in that transition. Like that's basically what the Housing First model does. What they need is time to heal. What they need is access to counseling. What they need is access to finishing their paperwork if they're undocumented, if they need access to that. If they need reunification with their children, they need help with earning their, you know, that status with their caseworker. Right.
They need more than just shelter. They need more than just a roof over their head. They need
a space to heal, right? Yeah. And so I learned that transitional programs exist, and I was so excited. And years before that, I kind of knew they existed. I did a kitchen project where I helped create like custom benches for what was at the time like a shelter for women, but I had no idea that it was like more of a transitional center until later. So when I went there, I talked to the director and I said, you know what, the next time you have a family graduate, I'd really like to help them. So like, what can I do as a designer? Or is there something here at the center that I could do as a designer to help these families? And he said, honestly, at the center, we're really good. We just got a grant from Jack in the Box. Like everything's fine. And so I was like, kind of sad. I was like, oh, okay. Like you're all set here. He's like, but what we need is furniture. And I just was like, I'm sorry, can you say that again? Like, I just left the furniture industry, quit my job, like had 7 years of just full dedication to the design industry, pursued this thing called Pen and Napkin, found myself in a conversation with you that was like riveting, and I was really excited and passionate. Felt like you kind of closed the door on the whole design thing, but you're telling me the solution you need that'll help families right now is furniture. I'm like, explain that to me. Like, why is furniture gonna make a difference? And he said, well, what we found is when we transition these families finally into their housing, we bring them like a laundry basket that has like cleaning supplies and like maybe a roll of toilet paper and like some things to get them started. But they're essentially going from a fully furnished apartment that they've lived in for 2 years with their kids to an empty space. And for the kids, it feels like a step down. Mm-hmm. But for the parents, they know it's a step forward to their, you know, new life. But it doesn't feel like that to the kids. And it's just so daunting to the mom and to the dad to try and like conquer that space and create that home feeling that they had at the transitional center or they had before that, before crisis hit or whatever. And so he said, if we could have furniture, we know that their success rate and their transition would be that much higher. So I started doing research after that, and I found this statistic, I can't say the word. Can you say it for me?
Statistic.
That's the one. Thank you, Rick. This is why I can't do podcasts, Rick. Okay, so
you're doing fine.
That shows there was one in Detroit from Humble Design, love their nonprofit and what they do. But they said that 50% of families that transition into an empty space wind up back on the street or back to the system. But when you furnish the home, they have like a 98% success rate. And I was
blows my mind completely.
Right. But it makes sense, right, Rick?
Like, it makes perfect sense.
Yeah, because it's dignity, it's hope, it's so much more than pieces of furniture. You know, it's more than just upholstery, or it's more than just these materials in a room. It provides the environment for people to thrive and feel comfortable and heal, right? So I couldn't imagine being a single mom and having kids and then coming home to an empty space and my kids sleeping on the floor. I'm not going to get good rest. They're not going to get good rest. So expecting them to do well in school and me to get to work on time the next day is slim to none, right? Yeah. So giving these families that kind of hope through furniture was just such a beautiful opportunity. And I was like, I can do that. So I told him in the interview, I said, the next family that graduates, I want to fully furnish and decorate their apartment. I had like $2,000 in my account. I just got married. I had no money to do that. Like, but I said it so that I knew that that would hold me accountable, because I can't just bail on a family that needs furniture. So I said it in full faith that like I was going to get my stuff together and make sure that the nonprofit was actually legit, because I filled everything out online and I don't know what I'm doing. So I said that, and then I went and got my ducks in a row. I met with lawyers. I exchanged services for like, I'll do a logo for you if you finish my bylaws. And they're like, oh, great, because we need to update our logo. I was like, because I can't afford your legal services or your legal fees. But I bartered. I used my skills and I said, what can I help you with? I'm a designer. And I helped them with like invitations and some other stuff. And they did my bylaws. They verified that I was legit. They made sure that all my filings were clean. And so they said, you're ready to receive, you know, donations. And I was so grateful, because we had this conversation shortly after a phone call I got from my first family, who is the Solis family. They had 5 kids and they had an empty apartment that they were moving into in like a week.
No pressure.
That was the first project. I found out we were ready to receive donations. I told everyone I knew what I was doing. We ended up getting a connection through just miracles, honestly. Like, a guy showed up at the office I was working at in Moniker warehouse in San Diego, and he was there for another meeting, and he was this marketing exec. And so I just asked him, like, is this a good email to send out to people to raise money? And he's like, yeah, I would change this and change that, but have you heard of Jerome's Furniture? And I was like, I'm not really, I'm from LA. That's like a San Diego furniture company, right? And he's like, yeah, he's great. Jerry Jerome or whatever. And I was like, okay. I was like, do you know him? He's like, yeah, actually I met the CEO last night at a dinner. I have his card right here and his assistant's card. Do you want it? And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna need that. Thank you. So I took that. I emailed them directly. I had about 2 conversations with their team. And I was such a good designer. I had everything already measured out from the apartment. I had a plan. I had a space plan all ready to go with measurements, so I knew what pieces I needed. And I just told them, like, the main thing I need, you actually sell on your website, which is a bunk bed with a trundle bed, because I need to fit 5 kids in 1 master bedroom. Yeah. Oh, because mind you, it was a 1-bedroom apartment.
Of course.
So I needed a trundle bed under a bunk bed. And this was before IKEA came out with that solution. So Jerome's was one of the only furniture vendors that actually had that solution accessible in California. And so I was like, this is crazy. And so I asked them for that specific thing. And then they said, yes, but do you need more? And that was like, oh my gosh, really? And they were like, yeah. And they did the dining table. They did the couch. They did the parents' bed. They really, really went above and beyond. And we just had to decorate. At the end of it, we had volunteers decorate. We had even neighbors came by as we were working. Oh, what are you guys doing? Oh, that's so great. Like, how can we help? And then one of the neighbors bought a patio set for the family. Just like really beautiful to see the community come together for this family. Oh, yeah. That was our first experience. I was done. I was so ready for this to be my new life. Like I wanted to do this for the rest of my life.
We're taking a quick break to recognize another one of our partners who helps keep the information and inspiration coming week after week. This podcast episode is also sponsored by Design Manager, the Design Trade's most reliable project management, purchasing, and accounting platform. The business of design is complex and requires solutions developed specifically for our industry. Design Manager has invested decades responding to the needs of interior design professionals and continues to deliver innovative tools to manage your design business with efficiency and profitability in mind. Visit designmanager.com to start a free day trial of the tool trusted by the top interior design firms across the country.
Before we go too far, I want to kind of circle back and acknowledge a couple of things that you said that I think are very important. First of all, I want to acknowledge the fact that you said that it was very scary for you to walk away from design and pursue something new, because that is a leap. That leap is very scary that I think so many designers can relate to, especially designers who start their own business. And, you know, our family and our friends think that we're crazy. And sometimes we may think we're crazy also, but I love the fact that you listen to your gut. And I talk about this a lot about finding your why as a design professional, and especially as a business owner, and letting that kind of drive the big picture. And recently I did a presentation in Dallas at a summit, and we talked about finding that why, but then we took it one step further and talked about how to incorporate your true why into your business. So you and I did something unique. We stepped away from the business of design and created something entirely new that still involved the business of design, but we were no longer designing traditionally. And I don't think that everyone has to do that.
Right.
But what I think people can do is find a way to incorporate that why into their current business to make that business model fulfilling for them at a much higher level, because we should always have that feeling at the end of the day that I know you have at the end of each day, that you're doing something good. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I tell my friends that still work in design or work at the same company I used to work at, that I quit my job so you didn't have to. Like I started Pen and Napkin so you wouldn't have to, but that you would still have access to doing these projects in whatever capacity you have to give. If it's once a year, that's awesome. At least you know that you have that tool in your tool belt that you can access when you need it. Like when you need that pick me up, or when you need to give back, or when you have come across a huge blessing of, you know, leftover furniture and you're like, what do I do with all this? I don't want to throw it away. Those are the opportunities where you say, no, I know someone that needs this, or I know someone who knows someone who needs this.
Right.
And you reach out to Pen and Napkin and say, hey, I have access to all this furniture, or I have this serious desire to give back and I need to do that now. And I'm like, cool, we're here for you. Cause we're not just serving these families. We are serving the design community and bringing them alongside our journey. Cause it is enjoyable. It is fulfilling. And we need to fill those voids sometimes, because we pour so much out creatively that we need inspiration too. Like we need to fill our cup in a sense, right? There's nothing more inspiring than having a kid walk into their first bedroom fully furnished and reaching down to their pillow and squeezing it and saying, I got my own bed, and getting so excited and being filled with joy. Like there's nothing that's like that. And as a designer, it's far more fulfilling than, oh, you did a great job with my living room. You really captured the essence of me. Like that's a great compliment to receive from a client, but that doesn't compare, right? Like that doesn't compare to the life-changing impact we get to have.
I agree. And I'm glad that you realize that what you're doing is for us design professionals as much as it is for the people that you're helping. I'm glad that you realize that you're not just helping one group of individuals, but you're helping also that group that's contributing, because we as design professionals, sometimes we're missing that fulfillment and we're searching for that. And you're providing that as well, whether you know it or not, but it sounds like you do. And I think that that's great. Another thing that I love about what you do and the way that your that Pen and Napkin is kind of kind of created is that it gives design professionals an opportunity to contribute in different ways. So I've worked with lots of great organizations. They're all amazing, where sometimes you write a check. Sometimes you just donate fabric and furniture. Sometimes you donate time. And it, I feel like you guys have created this approach where a design professional can contribute at any level that they're comfortable at, rather it's writing a check or providing time. But in addition to that, you're providing design professionals an opportunity to kind of champion their own cause as well, and really kind of take the reins and do and emulate what you're doing with the support of Pen and Napkin. Explain to us how that works.
So when a designer comes on board, they really have a lot of freedom, because I'm not going to tell you how to be a designer. You already know how to do that. Like, if you need training in that, there's, you know, other avenues that you can take. Like, we have internship programs and things like that, that we've done that have been really successful. Like, we had our first intern who had no design experience enter, you know, college and get her design degree, and now is working full-time as a designer. But it started with interning with us and getting hours and experience in the world that we lived in, and having access to all these professional designers who are giving back and making connections and networking. So that's how we serve students, which is really cool. But design professionals who already know what they're doing, they just need the need. They just need the challenge, right? So it depends on the designer, but typically, like, if your capacity is open, we're going to assign you a family that's, you know, got a great amount of need. And then we kind of leave it up to you. Like, what do you need from us? Like, do you need access to trucks? Do you need access to storage? Do you need access to furniture? And most of them already have access to all the connections they need to furnish and decorate the place. Some of them have trucks, some of them don't. A lot of times it's just a storage thing. Like, I can't put everything in my office, or I can't put everything in my garage. So if we could get storage for a month, I just say, yeah, let's work that into the design, overall design budget, right? So when you're campaigning for a project, you're raising like $2,500 to $5,000, depending on how big the project is. And you're reaching out to your community of support once a quarter or once a year, whereas we reach out to like almost the same amount of people every time. So this actually gives us more likelihood of funding a project quicker, because you're now tapping into your own community and your own network to receive the funding you need to do this project, which is better. It's like spreading the responsibility across all communities and platforms, right? And it does give a little bit of skin in the game, because as designers, I think sometimes we just want to come in and make things pretty, but campaigning is hard, and reaching out to friends and being like, hey, I know we did this project last summer, but I also know that you have a lot of stuff that's been returned that you can't use. Do you want to donate to this project I'm doing for the community? Now you're developing a deeper relationship with your vendors. You're giving your vendor an opportunity to do something for the community. They're never going to forget that. And you're establishing a new level of relationship with them, so that when you come back to do a paid project with them, you guys can reminisce on this community project you did. So it really does. I really encourage designers to not hold back that opportunity to really reach out to their vendors and to their partners and to their contacts. Right. So
yeah,
I give them a lot of freedom with the timeline. When families get their housing, sometimes it's like they just moved in. Sometimes they've been in that circumstance for a year or 2 years. They have no furniture still. It really just depends. And so I let the designer know it's not your job to take the burden or the pain or the responsibility of the reality, which is their reality is still the same regardless of your existing in this project or not. So don't feel the pressure to like turn this over 24 hours. You're going to kill yourself and it's not going to execute well. And that's not how we operate. Create a natural timeline that's going to give you enough time to do the project well, and at a level of excellence that makes you proud and actually reflects the beauty and the dignity that we need to have for this family, right? So
yeah,
they create the timeline. They say, I need 4 weeks, I need 2 weeks, I need a month and a half, whatever it is. And then we communicate that to the family. They communicate that to the family. And then, you know, they campaign, they fundraise, they spend the money. And that's it. And what helps us sustain our kind of administrative side is just that 20% of what you fundraise goes to our admin costs. But everything else like goes directly to the family, and spend all of it. Don't leave any penny unspent. So that's it.
Right. I like the fact that the designer has that fundraising responsibility, that community outreach responsibility. So it's not just like show up and make it pretty. We know we can do that. I think that design professionals are looking for a bigger challenge and something more fulfilling. And that is to actually leverage those connections and make those phone calls and raise those funds to make things happen. Have you had design professionals come to you with a cause or a family of their own in need and have said, you know, hey, help me execute this, through your infrastructure?
Yeah. So one of the things I was going to mention too, is through our partnership with Emily Henderson Design, she created a call to action on her blog of like, designers sign up to do pen and napkin projects. And we had over 280, I think it's 290 now, designers sign up across the nation. Right. So like we are in 47 states, we are in 3 different continents. Like it's crazy. And these designers now have been invited to join what we call our pen and napkin courses. So we have a one-on-one course that is an introduction to pen and napkin, how you get started, how you find the need in your community, ask yourself the why, ask yourself what breaks your heart, and maybe you'll find your why in that. And then present that to us. And then if the project gets accepted, you go into our 201 class. And so, yeah, we are now starting to find that designers are bringing the need to us, and not just the transitional center. Because initially we were like, okay, find transitional centers in your area, find programs, and then we'll, you know, help connect you with the family. But then they just started finding needs, you know, like the local library needs a refresh in their kids department, or the this foster home needs a refresh for their new foster child that they're getting in a few weeks. Like they started bringing needs to us. And I was like, let's do all of it. Let's say yes to all these things. Because if the designer's excited about it, that's really all I care about, because they're going to execute it if they're passionate about it. And they're answering that question for themselves. Like, why do I do this? They're finding that answer. I want to encourage that. So that's been very successful. So 201 now is designers presenting those projects to us, and then us being like, okay, what's your budget going to be? That seems reasonable. Do you have the volunteers you need? No. Okay. We're going to work on that, getting you those volunteers. Do you have a truck? Do you have storage? Do you have everything you need? Cause we're coming alongside them at that point to help them execute it in 201. But yeah, 101 is just assigning them their homework and getting them navigated into the nonprofit world, because they don't navigate it is not the right way to say it, but like getting them familiar with the nonprofit world, because most designers have no experience in nonprofit. No.
Yeah, we don't speak that language. So there's a learning curve for sure.
I'm just building this bridge from the nonprofit world to the design world, because we need professionals to solve these needs, because then it's going to execute better.
Let's talk about your nonprofit world for a second. Let's talk about your business, because just like any other business, as it grows and expands, there becomes needs. How can we as a design community, I know how we can help people in need. You are providing that platform to help us execute that. What can we do as a design community to help you and the growth of your company? Are there needs that maybe we have access to that we can contribute to the growth of your company to kind of further this cause?
Yeah, I mean, there has been new challenges with being in like out of state and even international. Like, how do we fund these projects without Chase Bank flagging us and saying that there's like charges being in Florida and California at the same time? Like, right? How do we solve that? So we're exploring what it looks like to create like reloadable gift cards, basically, that'll be like preloaded with the amount you fundraise. And then we mail that to you with your name. And then when you get it, you activate the card and you have like an actual debit card that says pen and napkin, that says your name, and you can go make all the purchases you need for your project. And all you have to do is, you know, keep all the receipts. And then we reconcile that when you send it back and you complete the project. That seems to be how we're going to move forward. Mm-hmm. But we probably will face, you know, other challenges with that. But yeah, I think that's probably the biggest hurdle we're trying to overcome right now is how do we distribute the funds safely and effectively so that the designers aren't, you know, putting everything on their credit card and then be reimbursed later. Like, I really don't want any of this to be a burden on the designer. I want them to feel supported. I want them to feel like they can do this and they have everything they need already.
Right. So, I mean, that's a pretty, It seems like a typical approach, but unique at the same time. I can see how it could be complicated as far as like reloading those cards as the project requires more funds. And you have the funds, they've been raised, you have the resources. It's about distributing that. So that's interesting. If anyone's listening out there and they have experience in banking, drop us a little message. I really love the fact, Katie, that you really honed in on your why, and you really trusted your gut. I know I already said this, but when we spoke originally, and you know, when I heard about what you all do, and it just came out of the blue. In fact, Kimberly DeGraff on Instagram tagged me on one of your posts. I think that was Kimberly's way of saying, hey, Rick, you need to know about this. So Kimberly, if you're listening, thank you very much.
And
the moment I clicked on the Instagram link, I knew that we had to have a conversation, and I know that you and I need to work together. So there's going to be legs beyond this podcast interview. And the reason that I'm so excited to have you on is because I want people to hear about what you're doing, and I want designers to hear how they can help and contribute. And I know that there's so many designers out there that kind of have this void that they're looking to fill. And that void has a lot to do with community service and community development and that sort of thing. We have a wonderful, wonderful skill and talent. And there's so much that we can do with it above and beyond what we're doing on a day-to-day. So I'm really grateful that you've given us that platform. And that was a big leap for you. And it's huge. And I think that it's amazing. So I absolutely have to acknowledge that. And I hope that in addition to designers, I hope that industry partners out there are listening. And I hope that they are inspired to reach out and help in other ways. I know that there's industry partners out there that could very easily support your infrastructure and sponsor your web maintenance and your social media.
Yeah, we didn't even get into my website. I told Rick before the call that I built my website like 7 years ago on Weebly, and I really haven't changed it. So yeah, if you're a web designer and you want to do that, that would be incredible. I would love for people to just be able to like log in and find needs and be assigned those needs directly from the website or from an app or something like that. Like that is the dream.
Well, the good news is you have an entire design community behind you. And that's what excites me about doing what I do now is over the years, I've seen this design community grow and develop and prosper in such a way to where it's all about community over competition and really helping each other. And Very cool. I think your timing couldn't be any better.
That's awesome. Well, I appreciate you guys reaching out. This has been just a really cool conversation, but also just a great platform for Pen and Napkin to be, you know, exposed to more of the design world. Cause I think we've been talking to the nonprofit world for so long, and then we got a little exposure with some Instagram, you know, relationships. But I think going beyond that and re-entering the design world has been a little strange. I feel like I'm walking the halls of high school a little bit, like making my way through and like feeling like the really uncool kid. But I think that I've been really welcomed and embraced, and I love that. And so thank you for welcoming me back into the design community.
Oh my God, it's my absolute pleasure. How can we learn more about you? Where do we go to see the exciting projects that you're working on Instagram? And what is your website to learn more about you guys?
Okay, so Pen and Napkin, all spelled out, penandnapkin.org. And then our Instagram is penandnapkin.org without the dot. That's our handle. If you are a designer and you want to sign up, you can sign up on our website if you navigate that and find the volunteer link. But I would want to know that you signed up because I don't get an alert when people sign up online. I have to just like check sporadically. But then you're automatically filtered within your location. So it doesn't tell me when you signed up. That's something that we need to fix. But if you do sign up, please email me. So I know that you signed up and that I can connect with you. I would love to know how many designers from this podcast reached out so I could tell Rick and that he can be encouraged by that. So my email is catie@penandnapkin.org.
Well, thanks again so much for what you do. Thanks for taking the time to explain and share with us what you do and to share with us the opportunity that we have as designers to contribute. So thank you, thank you, thank you. And I have a feeling we're going to have a variation on this conversation a few more times over the course of the year. So cool. Get ready. Nice. Thank you, Katie. Thank you so much.
All right. Take care, Rick.
Kudos to Katie for listening to her gut and fulfilling her why in life and business. It's not easy to step away from such a good thing. I mean, there are designers lined up for the opportunities that she was able to contribute to as an industrial designer at Tangram. But in life, when your true calling presents itself, it simply cannot be ignored. Now, not everyone has the ability to go all in like Katie did, but as she said herself, she created Pen and Napkin so others wouldn't have to. Because of her courage and commitment, we as design professionals can pursue our passion of design and exercise our commitment to community service through this amazing nonprofit organization. When Katie explained to me the definition of transitional housing and the type of services and environment it provides to men, women, and families, I felt like I had a pretty good understanding of how the system works. But when she told me that at the conclusion of transitional services, so many go from a place of support and security to an empty apartment to start their new life, I immediately understood why Pen and Napkin is such a valuable organization. That statistic that she shared just blows my mind. 50% of families that transition into an empty space wind up back on the street or back in the system. But when the home is furnished, they have a 98% success rate of starting a new life, free of the burdens that landed them there in the first place. Let that sink in. Now go to their website, help or donate in any way that you can, then share with a friend, and let's help Pen and Napkin continue to provide environments filled with dignity, hope, and a sense of security that everyone deserves. Thank you for joining us for another episode of Design Biz Survival Guide. If you love this episode, take a screenshot and tag us on Instagram. And if you're listening on iTunes, please take a moment to leave a review. It really helps us become more visible on the platform to design professionals just like you. Until next time, be safe, be kind, and get out there and inspire.